It's good to be with you this morning, and I so much appreciate the opportunity that you've extended to me to study with you this week. It's been many years since I've spent any time in San Marcos. I passed through on a few occasions, but I met my wife here in San Marcos, and we both went to school here from 74 to 79. I did cram 4 years into five while I was here, and thoroughly enjoyed the area, and I was just excited to get back here. But it's changed quite a bit in the last 28 years. It doesn't quite look the same as it used to, so I'll have to get reoriented. But thank you so much for your invitation to be with you here this week. And I'll say a little bit more about my family and all just before the worship period. But this morning, I want you to turn to Mark chapter 11 with me. Mark chapter 11, we're going to begin reading in verse 20. Mark chapter 11, and let's begin reading in verse 20. Here Mark records for us, "Now in the morning, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. And Peter, remembering, said to him, 'Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered away.' So Jesus answered and said to them, 'Have faith in God. For assuredly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will be done, he will have whatever he says. Therefore I say to you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them.'" Now, have you ever heard on the news of a Christian tossing a mountain into an ocean? I haven't, and I don't think we're going to hear that on any news. That's just not going to happen. But a lot of folks, just in casually reading the text here in Mark chapter 11, they think that, well, yeah, that could happen. That could happen. Because that's what Jesus says. He says, you know, whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will be done, he will have whatever he says. And so just a cursory reading of the text seems to indicate that Jesus says we could do that if we had enough faith. That we could say to a mountain, just be cast into the sea. You could go out to West Texas or up to Colorado and just say to one of the Rocky Mountains, be cast into the Gulf of Mexico, and that's going to happen. I don't believe Jesus was telling his disciples that they could rearrange the topography of the Middle East. That wasn't the emphasis of this text. But a lot of folks use this to try to make the point that you can have whatever you want to have if you just believe enough. And yet when we hear that, there's something that doesn't quite ring true to that. We're pretty uncomfortable with that, and I think that we should be if we don't really understand the text and the culture in which it was said and in which it was written. You know, we're uncomfortable with folks saying, just believe enough and you'll have whatever you want. But sometimes we're equally uncomfortable with saying, well, we'll say to this mountain, be removed, and it's going to happen. But this passage this morning, I want us to study it, because it doesn't mean, I don't believe that it means, you can go toss one of the Rocky Mountains into the Gulf of Mexico. So what did Jesus really mean when he said that we should have or can have a faith that can move mountains? Because it's just really not immediately apparent when you read this that what he says, or when he says that when we say to a mountain, it'll be done if we just have enough faith. So let's concentrate on this passage for a few minutes this morning, and let's see if we can determine what it does mean and how it applies to our lives. And when we begin to look at this and similar passages, I want to make sure that we don't make a couple of common errors that are associated with passages like this. I want to make sure that we don't, for example, make the mistake of taking this passage literally. Now, as we read the context of this statement, I think we're going to understand that Jesus is using a figure of speech. Now, here in Mark chapter 11, When Jesus and his disciples were on their way from Bethany to Jerusalem, you read earlier in that passage, beginning back at about verse 12, that they were making their way into Jerusalem, and they came upon a fig tree, and it had abundant foliage, but leaves, but it didn't have any fruit. And so Jesus uses this as an opportunity to demonstrate his power. And also, he makes the statement back in verse 14. Look back in chapter 11 and verse 14. He says, "Let no one eat fruit from you ever again." Well, they go on into Jerusalem, and this is where Jesus clears out the money changers and the animal sellers from the temple, and he astonishes the people with not only what he is saying, but the authority with which he is teaching. And so that evening, they return to Bethany to spend the night, and the next morning, they go back into Jerusalem, and this is where we read in verse 20 that the fig tree had withered away. Well, Peter is impressed with this. And Peter says, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree that you have cursed, it has withered away." And so Jesus says to him in verse 22, and I think this is the key to this text. What does he say there in verse 22 of Mark chapter 11? What he says is, "Have faith in God." I think this is the phrase that we need to keep in mind if we're going to understand this passage. This is the emphasis on this particular incident, that Jesus is trying to tell his disciples, you need to have faith in God, in God's power, in what God says, and what God has the ability to do. And Jesus is using this as an opportunity to teach them that with faith in God, you can do even more than wither a fig tree. You can accomplish much greater things if you have faith in God. And then Jesus uses a popular figure of speech. It was popular within that culture when he says in verse 23, "For assuredly I say to you that whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, but does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things he says will come to pass, he will have whatever he says." Now let's look at a couple of other places where this particular figure of speech is used. One of them is in Matthew chapter 17. Turn over now to Matthew chapter 17. Let's begin reading in verse 14. Matthew chapter 17, beginning in verse 14. Now, in this context, the disciples had just come off the Mount of Transfiguration. They had seen Jesus appear to them in all of his glory, along with Moses and Elijah. And so when they get to the bottom of the mountain, they meet a man who has an epileptic son. A man whose son was possessed by a demon. And so in verse 14 now, look at Matthew chapter 17, verse 14. "When they had come to the multitude, a man came to him, kneeling down to him and saying, 'Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and suffers severely, for he often falls into the fire and often into the water.'" And the next verse, Matthew chapter 17 and verse 16, says that the man told Jesus, "So I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him." So here was a difficulty that his disciples were facing. The disciples had failed to cast out this demon. And in fact, Jesus is responding to his statement about the disciples not being able to cure his son, when Jesus makes the statement, look now in verse 17, Matthew 17, 17, "Jesus answered and said, 'O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him here to me.'" Now again, he's not talking to the epileptic's father saying, "You don't have any faith." He's talking and addressing the fact that his disciples had tried and failed to cast out that demon. This is a question of faith. I think it's a question of their trust in God. And so in verse 18, Matthew 17, 18, we read, "Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour." Well, this bothered the disciples, that he could accomplish this so easily. And so in verse 19, the disciples came to Jesus privately. So a little bit later, they took him aside, you know, when all the crowds had dispersed, and they said, "Why could we not cast him out?" So Jesus said to them, because of your unbelief. For assuredly I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. However, this kind does not go out except by prayer and fasting. So here again, Jesus talks about faith that can move mountains. And he couples that with a strong rebuke that's given to his own disciples for their lack of faith. Now, there's one other time that this expression is used by the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And look with me at verse 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 2. Here Paul says, "And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing." Now, I like this use by Paul particularly because I think he helps to illustrate that what is being used here is a figure of speech. You know, we sometimes do that. We speak in exaggerated terms to try to make a point. And these illustrations, I don't believe, are to be taken in a literal kind of way. Because what does he say earlier in that particular verse? "Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and have all knowledge." Now, the fact of the matter is that there are just some things that remain a mystery. You know, we as human beings cannot understand all mysteries. Nor do we possess all knowledge. In Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 29, Moses makes the point to the children of Israel before they're to go into the promised land and occupy that. In Deuteronomy 29 and verse 29, he says, "The secret things belong to the Lord our God." You see, there are just some things that God doesn't choose to reveal to us. And yet Paul here says, well, wait, if I understand all mysteries and all knowledge and have all faith so that I can remove mountains. Well, I think he's saying this for emphasis. Because as we just read in Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. Now, every culture has expressions which are used to emphasize a point. But they're not really expected to be taken literally. We have expressions like that in our culture and in our language. Have you ever said, "Well, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse"? Now, you probably haven't said that because that kind of dates me. I did hear my grandparents and my parents using that phrase every once in a while. Did they really want some horse meat? Is that what they were saying? No, they were just trying to make a point, using some a very vivid illustration to make that point. Or you might have heard this one: "Quit beating around the bush." Now, are we actually viewing someone flogging some poor plant when we use that expression? No. Now, what we mean by "quit beating around the bush" is get to the point. And this is something that is unique within our culture. We kept a couple of guys from Peru that were going to school at ACU, and they lived with us for about 2 years. And it was really the idioms of our culture that they didn't understand. And I would have to be careful because I like to use idioms. I like to use these phrases and expressions. And I would say something like, 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. And they'd go, "What?" They didn't have a clue. Yeah, and we have those kinds of phrases that are unique to our culture, and Peru has them as well. Every once in a while, they'll use one in Peru when I'm there, and it just goes right over my head. I don't get at all what they're saying, but they understand it. They know the point that is being made. See, every culture has expressions like that, expressions which illustrate in a very colorful and in a very vivid way the real point that we're trying to make. How about "bite your tongue"? Or "could you lend me your ear for a minute"? Now again, we're really not saying someone should maim themselves and their tongues, and we're really not saying take off your ear and give it to me. You know, we understand we're mean, you need to be quiet here, and we understand we're really saying, would you listen to me? Hey, those are just expressions, figures of speech that we use in our culture that help us to make our point. Well, that's what Jesus is doing in Mark 11 and in Matthew 17, and what Paul is doing in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. They aren't really talking about bulldozing mountains with our faith. What's being used here is a figure of speech. And Jesus uses figures of speech in other parts of his lessons and his teachings. You go back to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. And verse 29. Matthew chapter 5. Verse 29. Here Jesus says, if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. Now, can you picture that? Was Jesus literally saying that you need to disfigure your faces? No, he's not saying, don't take this literally. He's not saying that. And just the next verse, verse 30. If your right hand causes you to sin, what does he say to do? Cut it off and cast it from you. I mean, we can picture that in our mind. Now, is Jesus really expecting to have a lot of followers who are missing one or both eyes and some of their hands? I don't think he's using it in that way. What he is trying to say, and he uses a very vivid expression to make this point, is that you should be willing to do whatever it takes to get rid of any sin that may eternally destroy you. That you need to go to great lengths to get rid of those things that are causing you to sin. And so he uses these figures of speech. And so what did Jesus mean? And what did Paul mean when they referred to a faith that can move mountains? Well, back in that culture, that particular illustration, that particular phrase of moving mountains was a proverbial way of overcoming, speaking of overcoming real difficulties. That's the point that they made in that culture. And there's a number of ways that we can illustrate that by even going back to the Old Testament. Go with me back to the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 4. Isaiah chapter 40, and in verse 4. Now, there's been some discussion here in the book of Isaiah about the time of the Messiah. And Isaiah is speaking about what's going to happen in that particular time when the glory of the Lord is going to be revealed. When he's saying the Messiah has finally arrived. What's going to happen during that time? What can we as the nation of Israel look forward to? When finally the one that we were developed for, the one finally comes forth, well, he says in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 4, every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill be brought low. The crooked places shall be made straight, and the rough places smooth. Again, did the Jews really expect for that to happen when the Messiah came? Did they really expect for those mountains to be cast into the Mediterranean and everything to be made nice and smooth when the Messiah came? No, they knew that Isaiah was using a figure of speech. He was trying to say that there are going to be better times. There are going to be less difficult times. There are going to be good times when the Messiah arrives. And the Jews were not expecting every valley to be exalted or be brought up on level with everywhere else. They weren't expecting every mountain and hill to be brought low. They weren't expecting every crooked road to be made straight and smooth. What they did understand is that some of the difficulties they had been having would be taken out of the way. That some difficult things would be made smoother. And in chapter 54 of that same book, Isaiah 54, go a little bit further. Isaiah 54 and verse 10, we have kind of the same thing used there. Isaiah 54 and verse 10. Here Isaiah writes, "For the mountains shall depart, and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from me or from you, nor shall my covenant of peace be removed, says the Lord, who has mercy on you." Now the emphasis is, God's saying that my kindness is not going to go away from you. My love is not going to depart from you. This covenant that I've made with you, that's not going to be removed. I will continue to have mercy on you. And the idea is that these things he had just mentioned, that the mountains would depart and the hills are going to be removed before my love goes away. That's his point. And I think the readers in Isaiah's day would understand that. But the emphasis here is God's love's not going to go away. God's mercy is not going to depart from us. That the mountains are going to be removed and the hills are going to be brought low before that happens. Well, that's how the expression "moving mountains and all" was used in Isaiah's time. And I think that helps us to understand how the expression then was used in the day of Jesus. In fact, one Jewish scholar says, and I wanted to refer to this because he's talking about the Jewish culture in the first century. He makes the point that the phrase about removing mountains was a very common Jewish phrase. It was a regular, vivid phrase for removing trouble. It was especially used of wise teachers. A good teacher who could remove the difficulties which the minds of scholars had encountered was called, now get the phrase that he uses, he was called a mountain remover. Now, don't you find that interesting? Then here they're saying that's just a popular phrase found not only in the Bible, but found in their secular literature as well. And teachers that were especially talented in taking a difficult concept and having their students understand, they finally get it. You know, the teacher that was able to kind of move the difficulties out of the way to where the light bulb would go on and the student would finally realize, okay, now I understand. That kind of a teacher was called within that culture a mountain remover. And so Jesus, the point that he's making in Mark chapter 11 and in Matthew chapter 17, and again, I think the point that Paul was making in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is that problems and real difficulties, not literal mountains, but difficulties can be removed with genuine faith. That's the point that he was making. He doesn't want us to take the phrase literally. He wants us to understand that this is a figure of speech and understand really that the emphasis is on what? Now this goes back to Mark chapter 17. What was the emphasis? What was the whole purpose of withering the fig tree? What was the point that Jesus was trying to make? And again, in Matthew chapter 17, it all centered around faith. And he said, you need to have faith in God. That's the point. That's the illustration. Now, there's another mistake that's commonly made with these passages, and that is to make the quantity mistake. You know, some take the passage literally. Well, some kind of think, well, you know, I know we're talking about faith here, but really the emphasis is on the amount of faith that we have. And some folks decide that, well, in some way, that what we're talking about here, what Jesus is trying to say, that if you reach just a certain level of faith, then you'll be able to accomplish just about whatever you want to accomplish. And we open our Bibles and we can read many examples of the awesome power of faith in James chapter 5 and verse 16. Turn over there. James chapter 5. And verse 16, and this is after he made the point about Elijah praying and it didn't rain, then he prayed again and it rained. And in James 5, he says, the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. And so then, oh wow, you know, here's a righteous man. Here's a man who has a lot of faith in God, and boy, he says a prayer, man. That's the way it's gonna be. It happens just like he wanted it to happen. Or earlier in that same book, in James chapter 1, James is saying that if you lack faith, or if you lack wisdom, what do you need to do? You need to ask of God. God gives to all. So he says, if you lack wisdom, just pray about it. You pray for wisdom, and God will give you wisdom. But verse 6 says, James chapter 1, verse 6, let him ask in faith with no doubting. And so we say, okay, well, we're talking about a level of faith here. You know, I've got to reach, you know, a certain point, a level in my faith that I'm not going to have any doubts. And if I can just reach that kind of confidence and that kind of assurance, then whatever I ask for, that's going to happen. And we read in the New Testament about those who had a great faith, or those who had little faith, or those who had no faith. And then the passages that we just read in Mark chapter 11, verse 24, Jesus had told his disciples in Mark 11, verse 24, believe that you receive them and you will have them. And if we're not careful, and we take those out of their context, and we don't think about other principles that we find in the New Testament, we begin to think that, you know, well, it's just a problem of not having enough. Kind of like faith is the spending currency of heaven. And I've got to get my amount up. I've got to get my level of faith up. And if we get enough faith, then we can have just about anything that we can desire. God, how much faith do I need to get grandma healing? Yeah. Well, if you have a certain level, if you have enough, then you can cash that in and you can get grandma healing. Or God, I've got a lot of faith. How about me cashing that in and you giving me that promotion at work? And we think that's what faith is. That we've just got to have a bunch of it. And if we've got a lot of it, then we can have basically whatever we pray for. Because what happens, especially, you've probably heard the phrase, when people don't get what they pray for. What do a lot of people think? A lot of people who believe in God. And they pray about something, and they pray about it, and it just didn't happen. And a lot of folks think, well, I guess I just didn't have enough faith. That's a common mistake that a lot of folks make when it comes to faith. Is that, well, my problem is, I just don't have enough, because if I had enough, then what I prayed for would happen. Well, let's turn back to Matthew chapter 17 and let's see what Jesus says about the quantity of faith. Because Jesus, I think, says that this idea is really not so. It's not a matter of the amount of faith that you have. In Matthew 17, verse 20, when they asked Jesus, why couldn't we cast out the demon? Well, Jesus did not say, well, it's because you didn't have enough faith. He didn't say that. That wasn't the problem. But rather, he says, because of your unbelief. Because of your unbelief. For assuredly I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. Now, do you know how small a mustard seed is? I don't have one with me this morning, but if I did, it wouldn't make any difference because you guys wouldn't even be able to see it. And the folks in the back, just forget about it. I mean, it is tiny. It's smaller than the head of a pin. And Jesus is saying that you don't need a big truckload of faith to do business with God. What he says is, even if you have a little bitty quantity of faith, you can remove problems that are before you. Jesus is not telling us that we need to store up some huge bank account of faith so we can then spend it as we see need. He's saying, really, it's not about how much you have. And here's where we get to the point that Jesus is really trying to make. What Jesus is emphasizing, and that it's not all about the quantity, it's about the quality. It's about the focus of your faith. In whom is your faith? That's the point. It's not how much faith you have, it's what kind of faith do you have. It's not how much faith you bring to the table, but if you're willing to bring pure, simple trust in God to the table. Because that's what the Bible talks about, means when it talks about having faith. It's talking about trusting in God. Trusting that God knows what He's doing. Trusting that God's purposes will be accomplished. Trusting that God is going to take care of us and that God will do whatever it takes to accomplish His will. And that's really what faith is all about. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 8, we see this kind of faith being exhibited. An absolute trust in God. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. His family's asking, where are we going, Abraham? I don't know. But God said He's going to get us there. And He told me He would lead the way. Well, okay, well, what's going to happen when we get there? I don't know. But I trust in God. And it's God's will that we go. And so we're going to go. It's that kind of simple trust in God that we need to be developing. A little bit further in that same book, Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 17, a little later in Abraham's life, we read by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. Now, had there been witnesses to that, you can just imagine their reaction. And maybe even Abraham was asking himself, Abraham, are you crazy? I mean, you're offering up your only son. Well, Abraham trusted in God. And we read elsewhere that Abraham basically received him back from the dead and believed that even if he had placed the knife in his son and burned his flesh on that altar, that God was going to raise him up from the dead. Because God had said, He's the Son of Promise. God had said that Isaac is going to become a great nation. And Abraham trusted what God said. That what God had promised, that's going to come to pass. That God will be able to do whatever He needs to do to accomplish His will. And then a little bit further in that same chapter, chapter 11 and verse 30, says, by faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. And probably some of the Israelites were murmuring, oh, come on now, what kind of military tactics are these? Walking around the city? What's that going to accomplish? And you can just hear Joshua saying, God said it, that's what we're going to do. And we just need to trust that if we do what God says, God is going to accomplish His will. And because of that kind of faith and trust in Him, God gave him the victory. God did do what He said He was going to do. Now see, that's how faith is used in the Bible. That's how faith was used here in Hebrews chapter 11 and throughout the Scriptures. Faith is about trusting God and His promises, trusting God and His purposes, trusting God and His ways. And here's where brethren sometimes begin to kind of break down. Here's where the disciples actually broke down as well in Matthew chapter 17. Now, was it God's will that they cast out demons? Yeah, Jesus had given them that power and sent them out to do that in Matthew chapter 10. And Jesus had given them the power to accomplish that, but they came upon a circumstance. And Jesus said, this one's a little different. It's going to take a little more effort with this one. But they came upon a circumstance that was very difficult. A circumstance where really they were kind of intimidated by the power of the demon. And what happened then? Why didn't they just move forward and do what God wanted them to do? Now Jesus says it's because of your unbelief. It's not that he didn't have enough. It's that they lacked faith. They didn't trust that God would give them the power and the resources that were necessary to get the job done. They knew it was God's will. It's just that they couldn't do it. God had said, basically, remove that mountain, cast out that demon, and they knew God wanted them to remove that mountain, but they didn't rely on God. Here's the key. They didn't rely on God to give them the power to get it done. That's exactly what Jesus is talking about when he talks about the faith to remove mountains, that we must have faith in God, that he can work his will through us, even when there are obstacles in the way, even when there are great difficulties that we must face. God said, let's do this, and we need to get busy and do it because we trust in God, and that his will is going to be accomplished, that whatever it takes, God's going to give us the strength, God's going to give us the wisdom, God will be able to level that difficulty. God will be able to overcome the obstacle. And if in some way, even beyond what we're able to understand, you know, what Jesus said, God can move a mountain if what? If we trust him. If we trust him. Now, you know, let's apply that to us. You know, am I willing to bring my problems and my difficulties to the Lord? In our culture, the tendency is to be very independent, right? I can take care of myself. I can do it myself. And it's easy for us to kind of think of Christianity as kind of a self-help service. You know, here's the answers. If I read enough and understand enough, and if I do it all, then I can get it accomplished. You know, I'm building me up. I'm doing for me. I'm going to fix me. And pretty soon we get to the place where we think we don't need the Lord. And that's what the disciples did there in Matthew chapter 17. Did you catch what they said in verse 19? They said, why couldn't we cast him out? It's not why did God cast out the demon. It was, why couldn't we do it? We've been given some power. Look at all that we've accomplished. Why couldn't we do it? And Jesus' point is, he points out that their failure was their unbelief. Who were they trusting in then? If they had unbelief, if they weren't trusting in God, who were they trusting in? Myself. Yeah, look at all the great things I've done. I can do anything. And they came to something that was a little difficult, and Jesus uses this as an opportunity to say, the power's not in yourself. You're not the one that's casting out these demons. God is. God's the one that's moving mountains. God's the one that's leveling the difficulties. Jesus' point again is that they thought they were going to do it. And we need to be able and willing to bring our difficulties to the Lord and just trust that God will help us through this. Or sometimes, you know, that we have to just accept the fact, sometimes we come up against an obstacle and a difficulty, and is it always leveled? Is it always made smooth? No, not always. Those mountains are not always moved out of the way. But what did Paul say in 1 Corinthians 10:13? 1 Corinthians 10:13. He says, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But, and here again is the emphasis, God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide also a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now, what does Paul assure us? If God doesn't level the mountain, if God doesn't take the mountain out of your way, what's God going to do? He's going to give you the ability to deal with it. He's going to give you the power to overcome that obstacle, to make it through that difficulty, to go over that mountain if you need to. You see, sometimes we concentrate on the difficulty. We concentrate on the mountain. That's kind of what Peter was doing in Matthew chapter 14, verse 29, when they were out in the stormy sea and they saw the Lord walking on the water toward them, and then they realized who it was, and Peter, says, Lord, ask me to come to you. And Jesus did. And so in verse 29, when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? I mean, Peter began to look at the storm, and he took his eyes off of the Lord, and he began to be intimidated by the wind and the waves, and began to think, I can't do this. And he was right. He couldn't do this. But he and the Lord could. And he just took his eyes off the Lord and began to concentrate on all the problems around him, and he began to sink. We can do the same. In life, when we look and we see those obstacles, and when we see problems in our way, and when things seem to say to us, no, it just cannot be done, Jesus said, yes, we can solve this. Just trust in your Father. He'll either move the mountain or help you through the difficulty. He'll take you by the hand. And basically, he says, we can do this together. In 1 John chapter 5 and verse 14, 1 John chapter 5, verse 14, John assures us, now this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And that's sometimes where the problem is. You know, we got what we think needs to be done. We have what we think needs to be accomplished. We have the direction that we think we need to go. It may not necessarily be what the Lord thinks. You know, we don't see the big picture. And we need to pray that his will be done. And if we ask anything according to his will, God's will is always going to be accomplished. Now, Paul thought for a while that he had this, what was called the thorn in the flesh. He talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And how did he approach this in 2 Corinthians chapter 12? What was Paul's idea? I don't need this. This is a hindrance to my work. It's making me a less effective preacher of the gospel. I need to get this out of my life. And so he prayed to God. Three times he prayed to God, get rid of this thorn in the flesh. I don't need this mountain standing in my way. And what was God's answer to Paul? Well, in verses 8 and 9 of 2 Corinthians 12, he says, concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. God said, I'm using this weakness to demonstrate my strength, Paul. And I'm giving you enough to deal with. My grace is sufficient for you. You can handle this, and although you may not understand it, this is actually accomplishing my will. And I'm actually showing others that I don't need some brilliant, wordy orator, someone who has some kind of charismatic appeal to others. In fact, Paul said you look at him, no big deal. You listen to him, not all that impressive. But God accomplished his work through him. And when Paul realized that God wasn't going to move this mountain out of the way, this thorn in the flesh, well, he just accepted that fact. And in fact, he said, therefore, I will most gladly boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. See, Paul had faith in God. Okay, Lord, you know, I prayed three times. You said, I'm not going to take it out of the way. I'll accept that. I'll work through this with your help. You'll give me the strength that I need to handle this in my life. And I know in some way that it's going to end up to your glory. In some way, it is going to accomplish your task and your purpose. So, what is the faith that can move mountains? It is an absolute trust in God. It's trusting that his will is best for us. It's a confidence and a faith in God that God will help us move those mountains. Again, not some literal mound of dirt, but those difficulties in our lives that need to be moved. And it is a faith and a trust in God that knows that, well, if God doesn't move the mountain out of my way, he's going to give me the strength to make it over that mountain. And that's what Jesus is talking about. That's the kind of faith and trust that we need to have in God. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time and your attention this morning.